Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. April is Autism Awareness Month, and today I'm devoting the show to siblings. The interview we just had was with Eustacia Cutler, Temple Grandin's mother, and that was a lovely conversation. And now I'm thrilled to be joined by Eileen Garvin, the author of How to Be a Sister, a Love Story with a Twist of Autism. And so begins How to Be a Sister, Eileen Garvin's deeply felt and impeccably written memoir about relating to a sibling whose autism complicates every idea of normalcy, family, and acceptance. Growing up alongside Margaret Garvin, who was diagnosed with severe autism at age 3, was a defining influence on Eileen's youth and adolescence. It was never easy. Eileen often found herself in situations that were simultaneously awkward, hilarious, and heartbreaking. Margaret's unpredictable behavior could be embarrassing in public and stressful at home. Losing a blue plastic hairbrush, for example, could leave Margaret inconsolable for hours, and a quiet Sunday church service might provoke a wild outburst of laughter, swearing, or dancing. How to Be a Sister begins when Eileen, after several years in New Mexico, has just moved back to the Pacific Northwest, where she grew up with Margaret and their other 3 siblings. Being 1,600 miles away had allowed Eileen to avoid her family, her guilt, and the question that had dogged her since birth: what was she going to do about Margaret? Eileen, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thanks for having me.
Your book is phenomenal. I related to it in a lot of ways, and your writing is so beautiful. I mean, impeccable isn't a nice enough word, and it's just such a wonderful, honest memoir, and I'm so glad that you wrote it. When did you decide to do this?
Well, I've been a writer, and I've always wanted to write down Margaret's stories because I feel like my brothers and sisters and I had such a tremendously interesting upbringing growing up with her. So I had pictured a series of essays, and I think I started putting it together maybe 2006, the general idea of just kind of capturing the family stories that everybody remembered. That's how the book started.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting, in the family stories, you mentioned your mother was very calm, which I'm amazed, and that your father was a bit of, you know, had a little bit of a temper. If you could just tell us a little bit about your parents.
My parents are wonderful people. I think we're kind of typical Irish Catholic family, suburban Spokane, Washington, where we grew up. My mom has endless reserves of patience and kindness for everybody, and she was just unflappable, and she rarely lost her temper, and just a really sweet person. People often will say, Pat Garvin is a saint. You just hear that over and over again. And my dad's a wonderful guy, but he definitely has the fiery Irish temper, so he had a shorter fuse. But they worked well together as a pair. It's a good balance.
Now, you talk a lot in the book about feeling responsible for Margaret. Was that something that you took on, or was it part of it? Was it a combination of your parents' expectations of you as well?
I think it was a combination of those two things. I was aware of Margaret really before I was even aware of myself, because she's 3 years older. And so I kind of naturally slipped into this older sister role without even really being conscious of it because of our ages. So that was me taking that on, thinking, oh, well, I need to watch out for Margaret. I need to take care of Margaret. That just kind of, I don't even remember when I started thinking that, because it was always that way. And then as we got older and my mom would ask me, you know, can you stay with Margaret and take care of her? I have to go to a meeting, or I have to do this. Could you keep an eye on your sister?
I went through your book. I mean, it's written up all. I mean, I've just underlined and starred and read, circle. I could stand and spend the whole interview just reading your book, but I want to pick out some of my favorite quotes. One was, when we were growing up in Spokane, having a relationship with Margaret often felt like living the Bill Murray movie Groundhog Day, but without the resolution. You know, I have a daughter with some special needs, and I know that feeling where it's kind of like the same day every single day, where everything has is like on a schedule, and I related to that. And I've actually used that same movie reference about my life in her earlier years. So,
right. Yeah.
How was that for you? That must have been really challenging.
It was, and it's more the farther away I get from that time, the more I realize how different it was. Because for us, it was just normal. And
yes.
The Groundhog Day part of it, the kind of, you know, it's kind of our own variety of weird family humor. if I remember the movie correctly, he was trying to get somewhere. He was trying to solve this problem, and he kept getting there the wrong way over and over and over again.
Yes.
And so that's what it felt like with Margaret, that, you know, whatever it was, if we were trying to get through church or we were trying to have Christmas or whatever it might be, we're constantly trying to navigate what might set her off. And we never quite find the right path.
Oh,
so it was
that,
very interesting.
Must have been, you know, you write too, quote, I spent the first half of my life painfully self-conscious about what people thought of us and wanting to seem more normal. That made me think of that when you're talking about church and try to fix it. You want to make things better, but you can't.
Right.
You know?
Right. You can't.
And that feeling, you know, I know you have so much good advice for siblings who are listening you know, who have autistic brothers or sisters. It's just so frustrating, that helpless feeling. And then you also write about guilt that you have, and if you can talk to us about that as well.
Sure. Well, the, you know, the wanting to fix it is, I think, for any child that grows up with a brother or sister that has troubles or difficulties, whatever they are, it takes, you have to kind of grow out of realizing, you have to grow into the realization that you can't fix people. I think that comes with adulthood. People kind of get that.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the guilt goes, it was really just being able, recognizing what I could do and the opportunities that were afforded to me that Margaret would never have. And that was really hard. That's still hard. I remember being a kid and, you know, we had a really wild, fun household, but I could leave. I could walk out the door on my own and go to a friend's house. And when I was older, I could drive. And then I got to go to college. And, you know, she couldn't do any of those things. And so there was this constant reminder that I was getting something that she wasn't going to be able to have.
Yeah.
And that's hard.
Yeah, that is hard. And you also had a sense that eventually you would be taking care of her.
I did. I really
did. And that's pretty intense.
Yeah, which, and I wrote in the book that I luckily realized that would make both of us pretty unhappy. Margaret has a great living situation right now. She's been in a group house for about 15 years and has three housemates that have been there the whole time and wonderful supportive staff. And so the idea of her living with me and me trying to create that, I mean, I just couldn't. I couldn't give her what she needs, but I felt like I should, because I could. That I was the one who could leave, and I could have a job, and I could do all these things. That I should keep that option open if she needed it.
Well, I mean, the way you describe in the book and what you just mentioned, it does. Her situation sounds absolutely wonderful, and you know, there's so much that you went through. I mean, like I said, I have the book underlined, highlighted, the whole nine yards, and. You know, one of the things that I know is really difficult is the screaming. You know, you write, when Margaret got really out of control, she screamed this kind of primal scream that made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. And then growing up with my mother and my brother constantly fighting and screaming, I can really relate to that and that feeling of make it stop.
Right, right, yeah. We Garvins are all still very sensitive to noise.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, and it took me a long time to understand that she wasn't angry, that she was afraid or anxious or all these other complicated emotions, and understanding that certainly helped, but boy, there's just something about that noise and not being able to do anything about it that's makes you feel pretty powerless.
Yeah, it really does. And I wanted to mention that, you know, autism being obviously a spectrum, and just to give a sense for our listeners, your sister was more on the severe side of the spectrum. Is that how you
right.
would describe it?
Absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about Margaret.
Well, if you met Margaret, if you just saw her, you wouldn't notice anything different on her right off the bat. But then if you talked to her, that's where you'd realize she has a lot of, she's definitely on the severe end of the spectrum. She has, she can talk, but her verbal skills are limited. She had a lot of the kind of typical autistic behaviors when we were children that she's outgrown. Some of them are still there, like the need for sameness that you talk about with your daughter and okay, you know, occasionally I'll see her doing things that I remember doing, she did when she was a kid to call